Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. It's cooling down a little bit, but it's still kind of warm out here in Los Angeles. But it's nice, and the sun's down, and it's a nice, pleasant day here over in L.A. I'm here with Scott. Scott, how are you doing today?
I am doing great. I'm a little tired. I had a long shoot yesterday with Del Casher, the inventor of the Wawa. So he was over. Actually invited him over to my house, and we did a shootout between, I think it was around 7 different wahs. So we had some vintage, we had some modern ones, and just had him do his thing. And then he also demonstrated his prototype. So I've got to edit that video and put it all together. It'll be probably up this week on my YouTube channel.
That sounds great. I heard that you guys had our guest wah last week from Bob Bradshaw from Custom Audio Electronics, and I'm dying to hear that.
I have to say that. My honest opinion is that one fared definitely at the top. I think one of the better sounding of the wahs. So, and I honestly, the interesting thing is he had an original Clyde McCoy. Of course, we'll let people listen to it and hear what they think. But the original Clyde McCoy from the early, from the 60s, 68s, something like that. And that thing was piercing. It was just not pretty, I didn't think.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I know some people have Clydes, but they... They sounded pretty good. They weren't that.
This one wasn't. But anyways, it'll be, never know what it sounds like on the microphone. So.
And I'm curious how my Vox fared with that.
Yeah.
I let him borrow my Vox, my old Vox wah.
Yeah, and that one did pretty good, actually. And then, the one thing to mention also is I just put up a video on Audio-Technica's AT2020 USB microphone. And their headphone set, the M50 studio monitor. And actually, in the middle of that, I do kind of a demonstration of using the mic, and I created kind of a semi-commercial for this show during that. So a little bit of an advertisement for TV Jones.
But. No, it's a killer mic, and we were talking about this before the show. I've actually had one of those for a couple of years I've used for podcasting and all sorts of stuff. It's pretty interesting. It's a great mic.
Yes, it is. So, we're actually giving away that mic and a set of headphones. You can go to our website, www.flowguitarenthusiast.com, to sign up. And while you're there, if you're there listening, make sure you join our chat room. We have a little chat room going on, so we have quite a few people in there. And you can be able to call and talk to our guest, 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. 815. With that, without further ado, let's bring in our guest, Tom Jones, Thomas V. Jones from TV Jones. Tom, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited about this.
Yes, thanks for it. I know we've been working on trying to get you on the show for a while, so I'm very happy to have you on. And I know there's a lot of people on the Gretsch pages, so I'll give them a little shout out that are pretty excited to have you on the show
great.
And listen to you. So,
thank you.
So just to start off, can you kind of tell us how you got started into working on guitars and how TV Jones, the company, came about?
Okay, I was 14 years old, and I thought, I want to play guitar. So I talked my mother into buying me a guitar from a pawn shop. And at the time, I was into Chuck Berry, and I still am. I think he's wonderful. But I wanted to make my guitar stereo, because that's what he was doing in the 70s. He wasn't playing in stereo, but he had a stereo guitar. So I took my guitar apart when I was 14, so that's how that got started. And throughout the next 15 years, I did tons of repairs and learned from Dan Earlywine, from Stuart McDonald, from his videos on how to refret and set guitars up. And I decided to build my own guitar, and I was in my 20s at the time. And that's how it all started.
And what kind of guitar were you building at that time?
I built like the worst thing you could possibly do. I tried to build a Cadillac. I built a double neck. It was a mandolin on the top and a six string on the bottom. And the paint job was difficult. I used tape to square it off and get a checkerboard finish. So I never finished it. But I finished my second one. It was just a six-string electric. And again, I went a little further than I should have. I arched it. I carved it like Les Paul. And a glue-in neck. All my guitars have been glue-in neck because I've always been a Gibson lover as far as guitar construction. So that's those are my roots, I guess, is Gibson guitar construction.
It's interesting you mentioned that you were trying to build a double neck. I actually happen to own the Gretsch Nashville double neck.
Great.
It's a heavy, heavy little beast, but so cool.
Yeah, real versatile, I guess.
Yeah. So when you were repairing guitars, when did you start working on some of your celebrity clientele like Joe Perry and Brian Setzer and those sort of folks?
Okay, great. About 1991, 1990, I got a job at a violin shop in California, the World of Strings. And I worked there for almost 3 years. And I learned from the owner, John Peterson, and Saul Cole, who has a guitar company up in Portland, Oregon. And I learned so much by working there. I kind of wish I was still there. But that's how I met Rich Modica, who lived in Long Beach and was Brian Setzer's guitar tech at the time. He was Brian's guitar tech for about 15 years. So he brought his guitar in, and I couldn't believe it because Brian was one of my guitar heroes. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, my God, that's Brian's guitar. It was a 59 Gretsch, the one given to him by Steve Miller. If you look closely, it has an extra knob on it. Uh-huh. There's four knobs down near the F hole. I was just blown away. I couldn't believe it. That's Brian Setzer's guitar. So I watched Saul Cole work on it. And then it came in maybe four times throughout the year. And then Saul said, hey, why don't you work on it? You know, next time it came in. And I said, well, sure. So I think I straightened the neck with a neck heater. And then it was time. Saul left the shop and Rich brought the guitar in for a refret. And said, Brian wants you to do it. So I did a refret. It was August 1993. So I've worked on Brian's guitars for 20 years and 1 month to the day.
Wow.
Pretty much to the day, yeah.
So other than that extra knob, and is there something... Now, we're talking about the 1959 6120, right?
That's correct.
So other than the extra knob, is there any like special mojo that you think belongs in there? Like, are the pickups just special that you've always tried to, you know, copy?
No, they just basically read a stock, like 4 kilo-ohm, 4K. The only thing that I could notice was the guitars were played a lot, so they were loose, and they have a natural bass response. So that's the major difference between some of the newer guitars and the old guitars, is the fact that they're so flexible, and the bass response is so warm. It's really hard to get a bass response out of an instrument when you're building. It's really easy to get treble out of an instrument. So that's one thing I noticed is how worn in they were. He brought in a couple 6120s. But that's the major difference. They're just played a lot and worn in.
Now, is that bass response something characteristic of a hollow body guitar like a 6120, or is that just in general?
That's correct, but I also built a guitar for a friend of mine, and he was working for John Fogerty, and the guitar player that played it for a year, took it around the world, and brought it back to me to get repaired, and that thing completely changed, and it was much bassier and looser. So I decided to come up with an idea to where I could shake frequencies into a guitar to loosen it up. I guess you've heard of people putting their guitars in front of speakers.
Yeah, a couple of our guitar techs have told us to do that.
Yeah, so I actually took this 80-pound drive motor and built a stand and clamped the new guitars I was building onto it, and I'd like punished them. I'd run a series of frequencies through them for days in a back room, and it really would loosen them up.
Interesting. Now, yeah. Do you do that on the guitars that you build now, today?
I build only prototypes, so no, I don't. I build prototypes so I can give them to the factory so they can reproduce them.
Oh, really? I guess I kind of was under the impression that you had like kind of your own little line of guitars, the TV Jones.
I do have a line of guitars that are factory made, and I made the prototypes. Currently, a Spectrasonic guitar and a C Melody baritone Spectrasonic.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, since we're talking about those guitars, I saw that you use a nitro finish, correct?
That's correct. I've always used nitro because it's so easy to apply and to repair, and so flexible, and it's the best in my opinion.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Is there do you believe that, you know, over poly, is it truly better? It allows the guitar to breathe and vibrate?
Yeah. You know, polyurethane isn't so bad. It's very thin, especially from the Terada factory where the Gretsch guitars are made, and that's where our guitars are made as well. It's a very thin finish, like cellophane tape. What I'm not happy with is the stuff they're using in the other countries. It's polyester resin. That's a two-part finish, and it's extremely thick. It's like a plastic.
Interesting.
That really brightens the guitar up, and I'm not a fan of that at all.
Interesting. Yeah. The Gretsch White Falcon I have is actually nitro, but it was from the Japanese factory out there.
Yeah, it's a great factory.
Yeah, they produce some pretty quality stuff.
Yeah, a lot of handwork. It's just amazing what they do there. They're so consistent.
Now, can you talk about some of the things? Well, let's tell us how you got involved with Gretsch, because obviously, you know, you're pretty iconic with Gretsch guitars. I mean, it's kind of like Gretsch and TV Jones. So how did that come about?
Okay, in 1993, I was at the violin shop in the guitar department for about 3 years, and business at home was getting so busy, I had to give my notice, and I started working at home. So Rich Modica, Brian Setzer's guitar tech, started bringing his guitar up to me, or kept bringing it. You know, he wanted me to continue working on it. So basically, just started working out of the house there, and got overworked and behind, of course. And say the question again. I'm sorry.
Well, I just wanted to know how you got involved with Gretsch.
So, okay, I'm sorry.
No problem.
Yeah, I had a long day. So basically. It was about 1998. Rich Modica, Brian's tech, said, "Hey, Brian's going to have a new guitar. It's going to be called the Hot Rod, and he's not happy with the current pickups that Gretsch is using. They were using basically the thinner 1/8-inch Gibson Alnico-sized magnet, and Gretsch's magnets are 1/4-inch. You know, they're much thicker and have more dynamics." So Brian wasn't happy. They sound a little dull. And can you make a pickup that emulates the guitar pickups, you know, you've worked on his 6120s. I said, "Oh yeah, this would be great." So I got it all together, and there was a blind test. I believe Seymour Duncan was involved, and two other makers. And Brian picked my pickup, luckily, with a blind test. He said it sounded most like a vintage pickup and felt like it, because it's very important. A pickup has a feel to it as well, you know, when you pick. So he chose my pickup. It was 1998, and the next thing I know, I'm getting a phone call from Fred Gretsch, and he wanted to know how I made the pickup, and wanted to know if I would be willing to travel to Japan and show his pickup factory how to produce it. And of course, I said, sure. So 1998, I believe it was October, I flew to Japan and showed the Gretsch pickup factory how to produce the Brian Setzer Hot Rod pickup.
And were there any other features in that Brian Setzer Hot Rod guitar that you helped develop?
Yes. I believe the bridge pinning, that was done with Saul Cole. I mentioned him from the World of Strings violin shop. We were thinking it would be a better idea, rather than put the pins in the bridge base, to put them in the body. And the reason was, I was thinking, what if somebody's restringing and their bridge slides, you know?
Right.
It's going to scratch the guitar top. So decided to put the pins in the body. And then we thought, you know, we should make the holes slightly oversized so there's a little bit of wiggle room. So we designed a system that Gretsch used. I think it was about 1999, 2000. And as far as the hot rod and design, I had more to do with the design of the Brian Setzer signature with Mike Lewis at Fender. That was about 2003. And I had a lot to do with that one. Brian likes to use a rosewood base rather than an ebony base, slightly warmer attack. Of course, the thinner top, back, and sides. Delrin nut material. Delrin is extremely slippery material. We use that. What else did we do? ABR1 bridge. I like to use the ABR1 bridge that I have made by a machinist in Japan. It's made from a solid billet rather than casted. I'll think of some other stuff as we go on. But yeah, I designed that with Brian. We got on the phone together, and then I let Mike Lewis know all the input. So that was 2003, and then the hot rod, I just helped refine it and make the top, back, and sides thinner because they were too thick starting out.
Interesting. Now, yeah. Now for those of you that may be familiar with TV Jones, probably more familiar with the pickups. I mean, as you can tell, obviously Tom is, you know, a heck of a luthier, and actually I recommend to go find him on YouTube. There's some videos on there. I was just telling Jeff about one in particular where you change pickups on an Electromatic. I think it was a 6120 or 5120. I think it was.
Yeah,
5120. And it's why you guys do it, not me. I can't. No way. The whole tube system and everything. I don't know. Maybe you could describe if someone out there has an Electromatic, like, you know, because that's the lower line of the Gretsch cars. What would you recommend they do to it to soup it up and kind of make it seem like
Yeah, the first thing to do is to change the pickups, of course, to something other than the humbucker. That's what they were using before the last year and a half. Uh-huh. I believe they're using black tops now. But before that, you had the larger humbucker. It's basically a Gibson-style humbucker made over in Asia, and it's wound with less wire. I don't think there are keepers, which are extra steel under the pickup to add inductance, which adds a little more warmth. So they try to lighten it up and thin it out. And, of course, a humbucker has a wider pole-to-pole aperture, which gives you a darker tone. So the first thing I recommend is pulling those out and putting in Filtertrons. But in order to do that, what we've done at TV Jones is we've taken the stock Gretsch rings and we added the two adjustment holes on the side, sort of like a Gibson adjustment.
Right.
And we add ring risers because the neck angle on those, I think they're Korean made, some are Chinese made, on those instruments, the neck angles are a little high. So you want to jack the pickup up as close as you can, especially the bridge. And also I recommend changing the wiring harness. And you mentioned the tube kit. I don't know if you mentioned it, but I'm thinking about it because that's part of the video. The tube kit really helps because I used to use string. And string would get all caught up in the switches and, you know, and all the insides, and it was really a pain. So what's cool about the tubes are they're stiffer and they're easier to pull in and out. And I like to use a dowel for the input jack because it's like a little wand or a handle. You can stick it in and you can undo the nut and washer and then just push the stick into the guitar body, and it's really easy to control it. I used to use an input jack that had a guitar string soldered to it, but that's a little hard to manipulate inside the guitar body. So the tube kit and little dowel that comes with it, I really recommend. There are a few 5120s that have, maybe they had a crappy paint job and they went with another darker color. You know, they do that in factories. They might paint one white and they mess up, so then they paint black over it. So some of the holes might appear to be smaller and the tubes barely fit. So you just have to be patient and it still works. It's just a little tighter. So I recommend the tube kit and a set of new pickups. And if you want to go the extra mile, get a USA Bigsby and a Delrin nut and maybe even some better tuners.
Now, we have a question actually from our chat room dealing mm-hmm. similar with this. With the wiring harness, does changing the wiring harness have an impact on the guitar's tone, in your opinion, and what circumstances would you recommend doing just the wiring
yes.
harness?
Yes, I would say 5-10% better fidelity, but the main thing is you're going to have a worry-free system. A lot of the Asian switches don't have the little silver tip like the Switchcraft does, and they tend to tarnish easily. So over the years, I've seen a lot of those Electromatic Gretsches, especially pre-Fender, that people think they have a bad pickup, and it's basically a dirty switch. I've seen that in a lot of guitars, like Epiphone and the imported guitars. So clean your switch before you think it's a bad pickup. They get tarnished easily. And then those little dime-sized pots, those are okay, but it's better to go with what they've used for the last 40, 50 years or more.
Now, are there capacitors or anything like that? Because, if you get a Les Paul, it's like people are mm-hmm. all into certain type of wiring, capacitors, bumblebees, all this sort of thing. Is mm-hmm. there something similar for Gretsch guitars where people are like, oh, you got to get this?
You know what I like is the Sprague Orange Drops. They have a really cool tone. And I just use a .022 on a guitar and the bass. And personally, I just have the tone on 10 when I play. But on a tone switch, I can really hear a difference when I add overdrive and I have the .0039. That's real subtle. It kind of has a Gibson-esque kind of overtone to it with a gain pedal. It's really a cool tone. So I'm into the Sprague's. And then there's polypropylene. I'm not sure what manufacturer, but those are high-end capacitors as well that I've used in the past. A friend of mine gave me a bunch of surplus about 20 years ago. You might know my friend, he's Tom Mitchell. His book is How to Service Your Own Tube Amp.
Oh yeah, I think I've tried to buy it off of Amazon, or at least I have it on my wish list.
Yeah, he taught me a lot about capacitors and resistors and all.
You had mentioned Gibson style pickups being on Electromatics and then putting on a Filtertron. Now, mm-hmm. while I have you kind of, what I want you to tell us, kind of tell us what is different about a Filtertron versus a humbucker. And then while we do that, Jeff, maybe you can cue up one of the Powertron or neck or bridge clips and get that ready. But tell us what's different about a Filtertron versus a humbucker.
Sure. The main difference is the Filtertron has less magnet wire. So let's say a Gibson humbucker, we're going to put some numbers in the air. Let's say 5,000 winds of wire. And a Filtertron would have about 3,000, let's say. So less wire. With less wire, you have more clarity. But there's a little less power. So the way to get power is, add the quarter-inch Alnico pick magnet rather than the eighth-inch thinner magnet. So that gets you more power. And by the way, this was invented by Ray Butts back in 1955, 56, 57. And the next thing you do is you add a larger pole screw for more inductance. So the Gibson uses a number 5 Philister head, and the Gretsches are using number 6. And then the next thing, which is probably the most important, is the narrower aperture. The poles are closer together. If you notice a single coil pickup, let's take a P90 with a ton of wire on it and 2 magnets. They still have some great clarity because the treble is only being picked up by one pole, by one row of poles. If you add another row of poles and then space them wider apart, you're going to diminish the high frequencies. So the Filtertron has naturally has better high frequencies because the poles are closer together. So don't be fooled, guys.
All right. Well, Jeff, you want to play one of the Powertron clips?
Okay. This is the Powertron Neck Marshall 1974X.
Nice.
That's the bridge pickup there.
Powertron Plus.
Yes. I have a quick question for you. With the Filtertrons, and the Filtertrons are actually a humbucking type pickup. Are they still function that way?
Yeah, hum canceling, exactly.
Okay, because I noticed that compared to my I have a Gibson Les Paul and I have a Gretsch Nashville, the Filtertrons that I have on the Gretsch, they had less gain, but they were cleaner. Is that because of what you were talking about, the pole or the magnets, or why is that so? Because they're both humbuckers.
I'd say because they're lower power as far as DC resistance and they have are you comparing it to a humbucker with a cover over it?
Yeah, mine have covers on them.
Yeah. Well, the Filtertron has slightly less output, but the funny thing is with the huge magnet, if you dig in really hard, they tend to explode. That's what I love about Filtertrons. They're incredibly dynamic, and I hope everyone out there can try them one day and see what I mean.
Okay. Now, one of the things Jeff brought up, and I thought I realized was that's a heck of an interesting idea. Do you guys ever split coil Filtertrons? Is that
happening? Oh, yeah. If you split a TV Classic, imagine it's a neck pickup. TV Classic neck pickup reads 4K. You're going to have a 2K pickup. It might be great, I guess, if you combine it with a bridge or a neck that's full, you know, series. But the problem is there's not much power, a little anemic. I recommend splitting a Powertron Plus, because they're up in the 7K range, and 8.5K. And we even have a TV Classic Plus. That's a stock Filtertron, but I wind it with thinner wire. And that gives you a little bit more output and a little thicker sound. So when you split it, it's not as thin and anemic. Well, yeah, Supertrons sound pretty good split because they have more inductance. They're using steel blades. So the more steel you have, the more inductance. And with inductance, it gives you more power and a thicker sound. Generally, that's a good way to think about it.
Well, we actually have a clip of the TV Classic Plus. Jeff, would you mind? Would you play the one with the bassman? That's kind of the Fendry sound.
Okay, here we go.
Love it. What was that?
That's the TV-HT. Sorry, it sequences. I didn't catch it fast enough.
Okay. We'll talk about that one later, that
yes.
HT.
Yeah.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, well, let's now actually before when we were talking about the Electromatic, I meant to ask this question because I had a guy that posted in the forum to ask this question for him, and I hope I do this right for him. The Dynafilter mounting rings for the Tiarmin pickups. When are they coming? He said they were shown at NAMM, and they aren't out yet. He was wanting to know when they would be
coming. Oh, okay. So the Diarmond and the Filtertron mount. So people want to put their Diarmond pickups in their Filtertron-equipped guitars. Is that what the question's about?
I believe so. Maybe from the chat room, the guys can confirm if I'm asking the question right.
Okay. All right. So I guess the problem is that I'm human, and I'm really sorry, everybody. I'll get to it as soon as I can. It's just there's always like a fire to put out at work, and I've been a fireman the last couple of years, and I'm getting organized, and we have a lot of exciting stuff coming out, and it's just a very difficult backplate. That's where I've had trouble. I designed a backplate that'll work. It's just that I'm waiting for my machine that I ordered to be set up to where I can cut that backplate. So it's just life, you know, and I really apologize for mentioning that it will be coming out.
Well,
so how does that sound?
No, that's fine. You know, it's funny as we are all firemen. I'm telling you, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what job you're in. It seems like you're always putting out fires. But you know, the one thing you mentioned there, and I love mentioning this when this is, you know, true with companies, is that all your parts are made in the U.S. You make them all yourself, correct?
That's right. I don't think there's anything we don't make.
Even the plastic pieces, the mounting brackets and everything, you make all that?
Oh, yeah, everything. You know, a friend of mine in Whittier, California, that's where I started my business, 1993, he had a pipe organ business, and I go into his shop there, and and he made everything. He had a metal shop and a plastic shop, and I remember learning so much from him. And when I started the pickup part of my business in about 2000, I decided to invest in all my own tooling because I didn't want to have to rely on anybody. I wanted to be different. And everything we make for our pickups, we have made by a machinist or whoever in the USA. I have injection molds. Our screws are made in Tennessee. Magnets are, well, I'm not going to tell you where, but they are the USA. That's our secret. And our pickup covers down in Riverside, Kingston, Washington, our bobbins. Yeah, it's really important to.
Oh, shoot. Hang on. I'm sorry. I lost him. Hang on a second. Let me recall. I have a caller on the line. Let me bring him back on real fast. Hold on. Hang on one sec. There we go. I got him.
Are you
sorry
back
about
there,
that.
Tom?
I'm back.
I'm sorry. Caller, please call back, and I'll get you back on there.
Okay. So good quality parts that we make ourselves.
Yeah. So you mentioned magnets. Is there a particular metal type for pickups that you personally think are better for pickups over others? An alloy
well,
of some sort.
Yeah, for the Filtertron pickup, absolutely the Alnico pickup, the magnet. So I really recommend the Alnicos because and use them because of the dynamics you can get out of them. Gretsch was using ceramic magnets pre-Fender, and they were very brittle in the bridge and very boomy and bassy in the neck position, pretty much like an on and off switch when you pick them. With the Alnico, you can play real subtle, and it's very smooth and soft, and then dig in heavily with your pick, and they just explode. So that's very important. Our magnets are USA made. They're extremely expensive. We've been using them from the beginning, and they happen to be made by the same company that made them for Gretsch way back in the old days. So what I notice when I build a pickup with that magnet is there's a bloom in the note after I pick it, a slight puff of warmth and fullness. And I've tried so many other magnets from other manufacturers, a lot of imported ones just to try them out. More of a spike in the treble. Less life. So I'm hearing a bloom and feeling it when I pick a note.
To me that's interesting that the Alnico seems to shine for pickups and like for me, I'm personally a huge fan of Alnicos for speakers. So it's quite
okay.
Interesting. Oh, do we have the caller now?
Yes.
All right, let's take the caller.
Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Do you have a question for our guest? Hello?
Hey, Mark.
Hi, hello? What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hello?
Can you hear us?
Yes.
What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello? Oh, he dropped.
I hope he calls back.
Yes I do too.
Yeah.
Well, one of my personal favorite pickups that I've you know, kind of just been over the past like 3 or 4 years, just been really falling in love with is a P90, and you make a T90.
Yeah.
So the T90, what's different about yours over like the classic P90 from a Gibson?
Okay, we'll start with the neck pickup that I designed. It's so close to what you're used to playing. It has 2 1/8-inch Alnicos, just like a stock P90. The difference is I'm using the larger number 6 screws for more inductance. So I'm winding the lighter coil and getting a little more warmth and a thickness out of the larger pole screws, more inductance. And I'm using Alnico 4, a little softer. The bridge pickup, I wanted it to bark, and especially when you hit it hard with the pick, because there's nothing better in music than dynamics, you know? As a musician, you want to control your instrument. You want to be controlled by it. So my thoughts were to go with the thicker magnet and the larger pole screws and just have a more explosive P90. So that's what I've done.
Well, Jeff, you got the? Can you load up the T90 neck neck and bridge combination, actually.
Okay, the T90. Hold on one second. Yeah, I have it here. Here we go. This is the bridge pickup. And then I'll just play both of them in a row. It'll go from the bridge to the neck pickup. The neck pickup next.
You know, one thing I forgot to ask is on these demos, what guitar are you guys playing these through?
Okay. It's a Tester guitar built with just a Obici wood, I believe. Maple neck, 25 and a half inch scale. I believe there's an ebony board. And what's cool about it is the pickups slide in and out, so you can do true A-B-ing. I've heard of A being done with separate guitars, and guitars have totally different sounds, even if it's the same type of guitar, because they're organic materials. So using this tester, you can really hear a difference in each pickup.
Okay, I think we have the caller back. Can we have your name good. And where you're calling from?
Hello.
Sorry. Hello. Sorry about that. What's your name and what city are you calling from?
Caleb.
Do you have a question for our guest?
Hello.
Hello.
Do you have a question for our guest?
Hi. Hello.
Hello. Can you hear us?
Hello.
All right. Let's move on.
Okay.
Call back.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting as I found out actually Obici wood is actually what they use to make surfboards. It's actually very lightweight.
Oh, cool.
And very strong.
Well, you know what? I think I made the neck out of Obici as well.
Oh, very cool.
Now,
we have another question actually from our chat room about your Spectrasonic guitars.
Cool.
They wanted to know if you use a treble bleed mod on the Spectrasonic, and if not, why not?
And I do not. treble bleeds are great for when I used to build guitars, little kit guitars around the house, and play in the apartment or the house. They're great for low volume if you have a tube amp because you can really retain the highs. But if you're playing a tube amp at stage volume and you lower your volume, it doesn't get quite as dark. The amp really acts differently at the louder volume. So I don't find it necessary at stage volume. But if somebody is playing a particular type of music or playing with their fingers where they really want to snap, I highly recommend it for that. But for general playing and a little bit of clarity when you lower it and cleaning up the pickup, and if the amp is playing at stage volume, it's pretty clear. But if you lower the volume to like your apartment volume or house volume, the amp gets pretty dark, I find.
So I
don't see a use for it.
Now, since we've been talking quite a bit about your pickups, and I would love it, we'll have to go into the HT pretty soon, but I want you to kind of talk about, one of the things I thought was interesting is you do a lot of different things with your pickups, like, for instance, your pole spacing is different between the bridge and the neck pickup. Can you talk about why you do that, and then kind of some of the other unique things that kind of makes TV Jones pickups different than the other guys?
Okay. So when I designed the hot rod pickup, the biggest problem I could see with the stock Gretsch pickup at the time was the pole screws they were using had a sphere top to them, like a half a ball. Mm-hmm. And notice that Brian's older pickups were a Philister head, more like a barrel. And I did a test. I took the B string poles out, and I played the B string, and it was just as loud, just about as loud as it was with the poles in it. So there was not a very good string to string separation that I noticed on Brian's guitars. So my thoughts were, hey, I'm going to make the bridge pickup wider, because in the old days it was just one pickup and they put it in two positions. So I thought I'd design a real bridge pickup. So I I went with the wider pole spacing. The bobbins are shaped a little different, and the alloys we're using. So it's you're really getting a real bridge pickup rather than just a overwound neck pickup for the bridge position. So that's why I just wanted better separation, because you know the bridge is wider than the nut. You know, it tapers out. So I just wanted it to be as even as possible, string-to-string separation.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, and then one thing you also mentioned is that actually the different alloys in the actual screws themselves for the poles are matter, right?
Oh, that's huge, yeah. That's a big one.
Yeah, I mean, can you tell us about that? Because I've actually never heard that until I was reading that on your site.
Yeah, and not only that, even with the keepers, a keeper is a little rectangular block that is underneath the bobbin, and the pole screws run through it. And that keeper, that little block, contacts the bar magnet. That's a huge deal too as well. So we're using two different alloys for our pickups. And if you don't mind, I don't want to say what those alloys are.
That's fine.
You know, yeah, but there is a big difference in tone.
Did you notice the same thing when you were researching humbuckers in terms of the string spacing? Were the older humbuckers using the same pickup basically in both positions? And also, too, when you took out those screws, did you ever try that on a humbucker? Did it make a difference?
Well, the humbuckers are using Philister head screws, the barrel style. So, no, I didn't notice that big of a difference. With the Filtertron, I could. You know, I want to describe Billy Gibbons. When I see him play live with our Powertron Plus, mm-hmm. I can hear every note. And if he's playing heavy chords, I can hear every string. And the string-to-string separation on the Filtertron and the way we do it wider at the bridge really makes a big difference. It's not a bunch of mush. You can hear each note independently. And that's what I like about the Filtertron. It's very clear and tight in the bass.
The one that he's using, is that your Powertron that you're talking about?
Yeah, Powertron Plus. It's wound up to 8.5K rather than 7.8. Yeah.
Okay, so he's using the Powertron Plus. Okay.
Powertron Plus, yeah, and nothing in the neck. We call it a Fautron. Apparently, he doesn't like to use neck pickups.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's amazing. He's got one of the most unique tones, and he plays tiny little thin strings.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
I don't know what it doesn't matter what he's playing, 1970 all the way to now, he sounds the same. It's just got to be on the hands. Now, out of curiosity, since you're talking about note separation, kind of reminded me of a guitar that Gretsch is actually making right now as a limited model. Have you ever made stereo pickups for Gretsch's, the ones where they actually split the strings, the top three and the bottom three are split?
Yeah, we actually make those pickups for them. I think it's the CGP stereo. They're blonde on the top. It's like a D-Armin casing.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I've been doing that for years. And we do the wider pole spacing because that's really crucial, you know, if you're going to go stereo in the bridge. You don't want the strings to bleed. So that's where our wider pole spacing comes into play.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I don't remember what show it was, but it was actually a question I asked for the audience to win some Taylor shirts and stuff was to say which guitar I think did the which company did the first stereo, and I think it was.
Yeah, Gretsch. That would be Gretsch, I think, wouldn't it be?
Yeah, it was Gretsch, and they did it for Chet Atkins as the reason.
Yeah, and the Gibson stereo is basically the neck pickup goes to an amp and the bridge pickup goes to another amp.
Yeah, and that's what most people are familiar with. I mean, I guess unless you're a total Gretsch head.
What year was the Gretsch Chet Atkins stereo in made?
I think it was like
59, wasn't it? 58 maybe?
57? Yeah.
Because the pickup, the different pickup to different amps, Rickenbacker did that with their Ricco sound too. But I don't know when that came out. I know it was in the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Gretsch was the first, and actually, I don't think Chet actually ever used it.
You know what they were doing, guys? They took the pole screws out of a mono pickup originally in 58, I think it was. You know, my brain cells are dying. I'm getting older. But from what I remember, I was looking in a book and realized that there's mono pickups, and they took out, let's say, the treble side of six screws, and then on the other pickup, it was the opposite. And that was stereo, you know, that way. But then they started splitting them in half. Ray Butts did that with his Tester guitar, I think, in the late 50s.
Yeah, and I think if you find a White Penguin that's in stereo, I think those are ridiculously worth a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Another thing Ray Butts invented was, I've seen a pickup lately, I can't remember who's making it, but you see blades only on the treble strings or bass strings, and then screws on the other six strings. That was a Ray Butts invention as well.
Interesting.
That guy was pretty brilliant, very brilliant.
Did you ever get to meet him?
No, but I know his daughter, and I met his son who passed away a couple of years ago, Randy. But their family gave me all of Ray's parts, and I have boxes and boxes in my storage. I picked them up about, maybe 6 months ago, and I have all of his parts and going to do good things with it and share it all with his family.
We have a quick question from the chat room.
Okay.
They were asking about the Billy Gibbons thing that you were saying. So is that just an empty case, or is it still a pickup? He just doesn't use it for that for the neck position.
It's an empty case, and we just have fake bobbins and fake screws, and it's everything but the magnet wire, and I think a block of wood instead of a magnet. So that's our FAUXtron, Fotron.
Fotron.
Or sometimes he puts an iPad in there, if anyone happens to see.
Does he?
Yeah. He actually, I think it was a Telecaster. He had routed out a mini iPad in it, but quite interesting. Let's talk about your the TVHD pickups.
Okay.
Now, what's unique about those? And Jeff can cue up on one of those sound clips.
Okay, those are single coil pickups designed in the early '60s with a lot of steel on the inside and a huge quarter inch magnet. The steel adds inductance to that, that very thin, wimpy tone. They originally read 3.4K. I mean, that's weak. So I do our neck pickup around 3.4, and I wind the bridge up to about 4K to give it, balance. And, of course, widen the pole spacing and then using all the proper alloys. So another thing, we reverse wind and reverse polarity for no a hum. And by the way, the person playing all the sound clips is my friend Chris Casello from Nashville, Tennessee, and you see him playing all the time in Nashville on Broadway at a club called Roberts. You got to check out Chris Casello.
Excellent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he the one that I think there's on your website playing one of the TV Jones model guitars too?
Yeah, that's him, the red guitar.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
He's great, yeah.
Do you have one of the...
Yeah, I'm going to play the three. The first one's a bridge pickup through a Marshall. Then it's a bridge through a Vox AC30, which I think is that real clean, chimey sound, and then the neck pickup. So I'm going to play...
I love this pickup, guys. This is what George Harrison was using, this style, back in the mid-60s, like Shea Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
They're weak, but they have the most incredible tone.
Okay, here we go.
I hope you like it.
The bridge.
Love
with
it.
The AC30. I said chimey. Here's the neck pickup.
Nice.
Yes, that's that chimey. That sounds very, and with the AC30, you're right. It gets that Beatle-ish type of a sound to it.
I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm getting older. I don't know. But for some reason, I am like loving neck pickups a lot more than bridge pickups. Maybe it's because I'm not listening to 80s metal anymore. But
they're not as aggressive, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Just so much more fun.
A question on your HT though. Single coils, like people using Teles or Strats. How shielded are they? Is the way you have that pickup set up, because it looks like a, it still looks like a humbucker type of design on it. I mean, the way the shape of it is. Are you able, by that design, to keep the noise down? Or, you know?
Yeah, the noise is kept down because it's there's less magnet wire. It's really weak. The coils are extremely weak. So you're going to not hear as much 60-cycle hum. What you're hearing with the Strats and the Tellys and all, and even the Hylotron, is 120-cycle electrostatic buzz, you know, from fluorescent lights, computers, and light dimmers. That's when people start shielding. But when you shield a guitar like too much, it's like adds capacitance, which basically darkens the tone slightly. So you got to think about that before you completely shield a guitar.
But like, for example, if you take like we used to use, I've used Rickenbackers, which are low output pickups, and like through a super reverb where you know you're playing live and you got to crank it up, not to distort it, but to get that clean. You know, that's clean sound, but still with that much gain, I was getting a lot of noise from it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, they do use very thin wire on them. They have a high DC resistance, but the magnetron is like 3.4. I mean, that's with 43-gauge wire, very thin wire. There's hardly any wire on those bobbins, but you're getting all the power from the magnet and the steel on the inside. And they are our weakest pickup, I would say, but... they're among my favorite tonally.
Oh yeah, the sound is great. But yeah. I mean, if you were in a high gain situation, would you still recommend that? Or, I mean, not necessarily. I'm not talking about a blown out sound, but I mean, it'll still hold its own with, you know, with extraneous
totally.
Noise.
Yeah, remember Richie Blackmore with the he's still playing, you know, with the Strat pickup and the Marshall. Just darken it up a little bit and then crank it. Okay. They're so lively. There's so much life in them. I just love that pickup.
So Tom, we're coming to the end of the show. Okay. So a couple, I guess, kind of like speed questions for you here.
Okay.
If you're on an island and you got to pick one of your pickups, which one would you pick?
Hylotron Bridge and Supertron Neck.
All right. And do you have anything that you can say that's coming out for? Because NAMM's not too far away. Do you have anything that you're working on that you can?
Yes, you mentioned humbuckers and all, and I'm thinking we have humbuckers, and our humbuckers are the regular aperture, you know, the regular pole to pole spacing, which gives it that character round sound. But I'm going for explosive dynamics and clarity when you pick lightly, of course, you know. So.
And those will install on anything that takes a humbucker, Gibson to
whatever. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. And then some little inventions that I'm getting patented that I can't really talk about right now, but I hope you guys can enjoy.
Do your pickups also, do you have the spacing for Fender? Because I know Fender is different than Gibson.
No, we just go 2.03, which is 2 1/32 inches is the widest. But the pole screws are number 6, so they're much larger. And if you look at a Tele from the, let's say, the custom shop with our pickups, they do just fine with a stock Fender bridge.
Oh, okay.
Just fine. No problems at all.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, when I toured the Fender factory, one of the guitars they had was the coolest thing. I wish I had expendable income and ridiculously rich. But they made a White Falcon Tele combination. I think they were making – they made one, I think, even for Bono, but they made a green one.
Wow.
It was beautiful. But anyways.
Oh, my gosh.
So before we go, Tom, tell everybody how they can find you.
Yes, find us at tvjones.com.
And on there you have an online store where you can purchase all the pickups, Bigsby's, all kinds of wiring kits, all kinds of stuff. So definitely check it out, tvjones.com. Next week we have Glenn Sweetwood from Sweetwood Guitars will be on our show, and we have a couple of his guitars we'll be demonstrating on air. So thanks for tuning in, everyone, and make sure you sign up for the Audio Technica giveaway.
And TV, hang on a second after the show. We'll want to talk to you after the show ends.
All right.